And actually, I'm so grateful. One of the person I grew up with found the rooms after, and you know, we both come from that same community who's here. And I remember growing up, and there was like a lot of heavy people. And there was like, I used to say there were 100 pounds that we all shared. So when you lost it, I found it. And then I lost it, and you found it. And we all, and I never, ever, ever, I met, so actually your brother, right, was one of them, and a couple of other people actually lost weight and had what I had, which is I come from morbid obese. I come from well over 300 pounds, and I'm short. And so, I was tall and wide the same, and it hurt so much. So I never, in the years growing up, there was so much talk about the pain of being heavy, and there was so much investment in people wanting to not be heavy anymore. So growing up all those years, I only saw, of those 100 pounds that we all shared, those available weight loss pounds, only a couple people ever made it to a healthy body weight. And of them, in my experience, I'd say zero, sustainable, right? So I never, ever, ever barely met anybody who lost weight, like it got down to a body size where you would say, oh my God, you were once fat. I never, ever met anybody like that. And furthermore, they were able to keep it off for 5 minutes. Right, for 5 minutes maximum. So you can't imagine how blown away I still am by what happens in these rooms, right? Because I meet people who have what I have, right? And you never know that they were once morbidly obese. And to say it's not, and I don't want to do a disservice, morbid obesity is not, that's just a small part of it. Right? That's one part of it, being morbidly obese. When I say morbid obesity and I speak about myself, it means I'm a food addict. And what it means to be in active addiction is far more than just carrying a lot of weight. It's horribly painful, emotionally, physically, and spiritually. Right? So it's not just about, oh, I'm heavy. Right? So that being said, I never met anybody who was able to be treated from this condition in my whole life until I walked into the rooms. And I wasn't expecting to hear what I heard when I walked in. So what we offer in those pictures is a testament to that life can change. And I didn't think that was possible. So I want to share my story in the spirit of what we're doing here today. I found, like many of us, I found food early on. I don't know why. It's probably somewhat genetic. I have no idea. I know that I was, and this is the sob story, right? And you can try to connect here. It doesn't really matter what we're about to hear, because I would have found food anyways. But I'm the third of six. When I was 5 years old, my twin brothers were born prematurely. My mom didn't know she was carrying twins. At the time, it was pre-ultrasound. And she was rushed to the hospital at 7 months. I woke up, she wasn't there. I was sleeping. My dad was a physician, he was on call. I was sleeping in her room, I didn't see her, I was terrified. I woke up, she was gone. She was at the hospital. I woke up my sister, there was a note that she went into early labor. And my twin brothers were born very, very sick. They were both in the ICU. One of them suffered brain damage and had oxygen loss and cerebral palsy and required multiple surgeries. He was, they thought he was gonna die. They had a do not resuscitate order. It was a long time ago. Some resident came and said, I can fix this, went against medical advice, did the surgery, and he lived, right? So my parents had expected him to die. A surgeon who was in training said, I'm gonna do the surgery anyways, I know I can help him. And he lives, but he lives and he's super impaired. Earthquake in the household, right? Absolute earthquake in my household. And it went from a happy and joyous place, mostly, to a very, very painful, this shouldn't be happening to us environment, right? But it happened. Now, I hear the silence in the room, it's a very, very sad story, right? And yes, I found food, absolutely. I found food early on, and it felt really good. It felt really good to eat food because of the circumstances, probably because of the circumstances I'm in. My mom was out for the count. She was wrecked, right? This was not supposed to happen to her, and she did not like it. He went to foster care. He didn't even live with us for the first 3 years, right? And it was sad, and there was a lot of mourning and adjusting. He actually came back to live with us. After 3 years, the kids rallied, and he moved back in, and he became a part of our life. And still to this day, is a very painful thing for my parents. This wasn't supposed, for my mom especially, this wasn't supposed to happen. That being said, right? That's not why I would have found food anyways. I promise you, right? I found it, and it made me feel good. I know that it made me feel good, but what I don't want to do is connect to that part of the story and just get married to it and say, you see, it's really sad. I have to eat, right? That's just my story. And I really want you to hear the distinction. I can get attached to that narrative so much and say that the story of my life is they abandoned me because of that situation and I wasn't nurtured, and I wasn't taken care of, and I can't help it. I have to eat. And I'm telling you that there's another universe story where none of that happens and I eat anyways. Right? Right? And there's another universe where I want to be a professional athlete. Not that there's not that universe actually. There's another universe where I want to be I want to get into medical school and I don't get in and I eat because of that. And there's always gonna be a story that I belong to, right? That says, don't you know I have to do this, right? But the bottom line is, that's my story. I found food, and guess what? It felt really fucking good, right? It feels really good to eat. And I don't know what happens to a guy like me, but my wiring changes. So instead of, just living life, doing life, my main mission in life is how am I gonna eat, right? I love eating. I love eating. So when everybody comes home and is waiting, right, all I'm thinking about is how can I eat, right? That's really important to me. It's really important for me to eat. Just like it's really important for a heroin addict to use heroin, just like it's really important for an alcoholic to use alcohol. I love eating. So I did that, right? I ate. So what happens when, and I don't need, by the way, I need to eat, but I don't need to eat like that. I want to eat like that, right? I don't need to eat like that. I need to be sustained. I want to eat food like a heroin addict likes to use heroin. So what happens to me when I put my wants ahead of my needs, right? So I need basic things. I need food and shelter and oxygen. I need to have some emotional support. I need to have a community. Those are my basic human needs, right? I need to have some intellectual pursuits, probably. Those are my needs. When I put a want, right, I want a lot of food. I want a lot of sex. I want a lot of drugs, right? When I put my wants ahead of my needs, and I treat them as an equal or more important player, what happens to my life, right? It blows the fuck up, excuse my language, right? It blows up, right? I blow up my life because I make something else more important than my basic needs. So for me, all roads, I have this problem. I want to eat and I want the rewards of life, right? So I want to be recognized. I want to be recognized as, capable, attractive, smart, highly competent, funny. I want everybody to notice how great I am, but I also, I want my food just as much, and I'm really bitter when you don't notice how wonderful I am, even though I haven't earned any of it, because I'm so busy chasing the food, right? So it's an unfair request of life that I, my baseline is very, very unfair. This baseline in active addiction, I'm eating, and I want you to see me as wonderful, but yet I'm not doing the things that the wonderful people are doing, right? Because I'm too busy eating. I'm too busy in the food, right? So how does that show up? What, that's theoretical. What is the specifics of that? I don't do the schoolwork because I don't have the discipline. So I learn how to lie and cheat, right? Big time. I learn how to lie and cheat. I learn that in a relationship, you'll like me if I accommodate you or if I just break you. So if you tell me, if I just say what you want, you'll be happy. So I don't have to learn how to be trustworthy because you'll like me. If I have some juice that Craig tells me, if Craig tells me a secret, if I tell Brian, right, he'll like me. So I learned that I can help people, I can help myself, or I think I can help myself get what I want by not having any integrity. It's all rooted in dishonesty and sneaking, right? So the disease teaches me how to not be a good friend, how to not work honorably, how to not show up honorably. And it teaches me that I have this thought life in my disease that it'll all work out and I can do whatever I want, whenever I want. My real fantasy in my disease is I don't have to have any rules, right? I get to do whatever I want, however I want, whenever I want. And it starts with the food. I get to eat whatever I want. I get to eat however much I want. There are, saying no to myself is not an option in the disease. I hate saying no to myself, right? I want to do whatever I want and I'm going to make it happen. I have this, if you think about being a teenager, you know, I don't know if people can connect to being a teenager. When I was a teenager, I thought I could move mountains, right? I thought the rules don't apply to me. I had this great brain filled with no data, right? And I thought, I have no experience, but let me tell you how it works. So I, in the disease, because I put food first, right? I started thinking, I can get away, I can pull off miracles, right? I can literally make mountains move and I'll figure it out. And I don't do this, I didn't ask the question, I didn't look to people, what have you done for success, right? I didn't have the ability to say, what have people done before me? I said to myself, I would figure this out, right? So I know better was a big part of my disease. I know better, right? Let me tell you what works. So over time, right, that mentality, right, so this is why this is not just a I want to lose weight workshop, right? That was the disease occupying me. So when you didn't love me and recognize me, I became resentful, right? On some level, I was terrified, right? I wasn't awake to my feelings, but I was terrified because I kind of knew on some level this is nonsense. Like, I had this idea that my college roommate he came from a multi quadrillionaire family. I thought he'd just support me. we're best friends. I mean, doesn't that mean that we're going to pay for my whole life? Right? So those were the types of ideas that I thought, as long as I don't have to do the work, on some level, doing what predates, but even more powerful than the disease is this fantasy that I can get the rewards without doing work. Like, work is a tech. Food, they're both four-letter words, food and work, right? So I don't want to do the work. I want people to do things for me. I love people doing things for me, my disease. But at the same time, don't you dare say that I didn't do, don't act like I'm not great, but I want everybody to do everything for me. So it's a very, very, very unfair, immature relationship with life. It breeds resentment. I'm angry at you all the time, and I want to get you when you don't notice how great I am, even though I'm not doing the work. I'm terrified. On some level, I'm terrified because I want what I want, and I know that I'm not executing well, right? And I'm full of shame, right? In reality, when you're, so this disease is progressive, right? I was always the heaviest in the room, but I was always one of the heavier kids, right? So it feels terrible. So I so don't want you to notice what I'm acutely aware of, right? I notice how heavy I am, and the last thing I want you to notice is that. And when you even hint that you notice I'm heavy, I want to get you. So I develop a very sharp tongue, right? So I strike before I get struck, right? I learn how to lash out or hide as needed, right? Because I don't want you to notice what is obvious. This is one of the problems of our disease, right? Is that we wear it. Not as if, like, you know, heroin addicts think that they're really hiding it. It's not
such a mystery when they're drunk, right? Like,
but we wear it, and I really and that comes with a lot. I'm not a lot of sense that on some level there's a big party out there that I'm not invited to. Right, I want to be so bad, and who am I kidding? I wanted to be invited to the whatever that party was. I didn't belong, and I so badly wanted to be included in that, you know, whatever that party was, that I felt like I wasn't invited to. I didn't feel like I belonged, and I think that's consistent with every addiction, right? Even if they're all hit cool with tattoos in my head, right? There's still a sense, if I'm willing to hurt myself that way, I probably have a sense of I don't belong, and low self-worth. So, life, I get bigger and bigger and bigger, life gets smaller and smaller and smaller. And like I said, I was always one of the, I wasn't born over 300 pounds, right? In fifth grade, I wasn't 300 pounds, but I was always one of the heavier kids, and it just kept getting worse and worse and worse. And my strategies kept getting, also were getting worse and worse. My ability to cope with life on life's terms got worse and worse and worse, and I started having a lot of relationships fracture, and people started to not want to hang out with me, and I wasn't a trustworthy friend, and you'll hear me say this, I wouldn't, the guy who, me in an active addiction, I wouldn't marry me, I wouldn't want to be my friend, and I wouldn't hire me, and I wouldn't want me to be a father. I wouldn't want a parent. I wouldn't want me as a parent, husband, friend, or employee, right? I don't, what I bring to the table is toxic in the disease, that's me. And so I think it's important to talk about the first point of recovery for me was not Overeaters Anonymous. I was like smoking, drinking, and out of control, and wearing the same thing every day. I always showered. Some of us get to a place where we don't shower, and I was able to finish school too. I was kind of good at like winging. I was winging it. I wasn't a dedicated student. I was good at winging school. And somebody said to me, and I hope that people listen to this, because it's a process. I didn't just wake up one night and say, rah, rah, go away. You know, like, I'm here to change. It wasn't my story. Somebody said to me, why don't you start brushing your teeth? And I was probably 20 years old. Right? And I look back at the story, right? I was like, I would ash on myself, and I would wear the same. It was very, very full of self-loathing, and but angry and bitter. And I'm not even friends with that person anymore. He's another one who broke up with me because a good friend who didn't want to be friends with me anymore. But he said to me, why don't you start brushing your teeth? And I did. I did. And that's all I could do. I brushed my teeth every day, at least once a day. I brushed my teeth at 20 years old. And then the next data point was I went to graduate school. Like I said, I was a good student, not an honorable student, a good student. I mean, good at school, but no integrity. And in graduate school, there was a guy, he was actually very powerful. He would meet with me, even he would train me, and he was dying of cancer. I wore a mask and meet with him. And he said something like, it's my ethical obligation to tell you that, and to tell you that you have a problem with food, and I think you're a food addict. Now, I was probably about 24, and up to that point, I wasn't awake to what was going on. I knew I hated being so heavy, and I knew I would try to lose weight, and periodically, for a minute, I'd lose some weight, and then I'd gain it all back, plus some, right, because I could stop, but I can't stay stopped, right? That's part of what our problem is. So he said to me, that's my ethical obligation, in a very kind of like nerdy professor voice, it's my ethical obligation to tell you that you have a problem with food, you're a food addict. I said, what are you talking about? Again, I know better. What are you talking about? I'm not an alcoholic. And I said, I have to eat. He said, not like that. And something happened to me, right? Something in me. So I was brushing my teeth for, you know, probably 4 years, and something in me opened up, and I, for the first time, I kind of understood that maybe something, I wasn't fully connected to it, but what's going on? Maybe this thing with me and eating is more than just like just weakness. Maybe there's something to it. Alcoholics drink alcoholically. Maybe I eat that way. He said, you've got two choices. You can go to a spiritual program, right, where your treatment is based on spirituality and spiritual principles and higher power, or you can go to, and this was in Chicago, or you can go to a men's group, and the men's group is like a blue-collar men's group, and like you'll love, you know, it's great. They have a method of, it's a commercial method, but it's only men, and I said, spirituality, no way. I went to the men's group, and they had some good things to say. They were kind of funny. When I got in, they were like, cattle scale. They put me on the cattle scale. They had a people were so heavy, and they're like, they would argue, and they would say, like, they were very gruff, sort of Chicago blue-collar policeman, fireman types, and they would say, the men would argue and say, I didn't get away. They said, nobody shoved the food up your ass, and they would, you know, the Iron Man never lies, and they had all these things, and I think it's worth telling. Somebody was there, came back hungover, and he said he comes to, like, they have Sharon, and he says, like, he shared how he woke up and he came home, he was drunk, and he took tuna fish, and so lazy, he took a big jar of mayonnaise and put two cans of tuna in it, ate the whole, just straight out of the jar of mayonnaise, and when he woke up, his wife was screaming, who ate the cat food? It was super entertaining. It was super entertaining. They had the people there who were really successful, and like everything else, once I started having a hard time, I ran away. I couldn't stay. It was too hard for me to cope with not being successful, right? I couldn't do it. And again, I wasn't awake to what's going on. That didn't work. I went to Overeaters Anonymous once, and I heard what I heard in Overeaters Anonymous was, I went there before I got abstinent. It was probably, I was probably about 25, and I heard, what I saw was, this is what my head said to me. These people are screwed up. They're angry. I don't go to groups, I give groups, and I'm better than all of you, and I don't want what you have. You're too screwed up, right? Anybody relate to that? So I'm better. So that lasted. When you come in with that attitude, let me tell you why I'm better. You can't offer me anything. You're probably not going to get much. So that lasted for about a week. And God is beautiful because God gave me more pain. So if that doesn't work, I didn't hear anything. Then, so that bought me more eating and more weight. Then I come to, I move back to LA, and I go again. And this time, I don't say, I don't go to groups, I give groups. I say, there are only women here. They reek, their perfume reeks. It's in a church. They're whining. And again, I don't hear anything. I tell. I don't listen. I tell. Right? Because that's me and my disease. I tell you how it works. I write. By the way, I'm so arrogant. I was going to write my dissertation for graduate school about how it works. I was going to chronicle myself. Right? The problem was, and I even had a whole group of professors ready for a committee. And the problem was, I never could start. Right? I wanted to write about me, of course. Right? So, because I'm going to learn and teach how to get well, but I didn't know how to. So. At the same time, I'm in a mental health graduate postdoctoral training. And by the way, in case you figured out, I'm a clinical psychologist. And guess how That is a liability, right? That is not an asset. That is a liability for an arrogant guy who thinks he's smart and has low self-esteem, right? Right, so that is not helpful to this process whatsoever. It is a big liability because it gives me a sense that I'm some sort of expert. I am no expert on this, right? I can share my experience, strength, and hope, and how hard it is to be in the world of alleged helping. I mean, not that I have much to offer, but in that space, I don't have much to offer. But it's very, very hard to be that guy, right, who's supposedly trained in helping, right? So I'm lucky, and by the way, the only field placements I can get are with majorly mentally ill people, because people wouldn't have me. They don't want it. They're like, hey, I got so much to offer. They don't want you. That's the truth of it, which makes sense. So not because I'm bad, but because I don't have much to offer. I didn't. So I get a field placement, an internship, the way the gods have it, right, the way the gods take care of me, I'm with a psychiatrist and a psychologist who are much older than me. They're my parents' age. And remember, I can't hear it from you guys because I'm better than you, right? And I couldn't hear it. And my big ego needed to hear it from them. So here's how, and they were so, they were such impactful helpers. And they didn't rush it. So the woman who was in AA for many years she told me about Overeaters Anonymous and she left me alone. She didn't push me. She just told me, so for 2 years, I didn't even listen to her. I didn't even ask her about it. But I knew she was sober, and I knew she kind of knew. I knew she, and she never pushed me. And I don't want to push anybody either. I'm not going to force this. The person has to be ready. The guy, the psychiatrist, I didn't know he was in the program. He would talk about stuff, and I went, wow, this guy, he's rail thin. I really think he gets it. And one day I asked him, I say to him, it's 1996, and I say to him, or 95, and I say to him, I just get this sense that you know what it's like to be like me, super heavy, right? And I said, you really know. And I said, what do you do? He said, he said, I was once over 100 pounds overweight. You'd never know, right? I said to him, really, what did you do? He said, I never deviate. And I said, what is he like? He's like, I pretty much eat the same stuff. You know, I never deviate. And I looked at him, here's my head. And I said to him, in my head, I'm like, I asked him, you never eat frozen yogurt? Like fake food? He's like, no. And I thought to myself, what the fuck does he know? Right? I'm over 300 pounds. I'm like spilling, and my life is feeling like it's falling apart by thread. My marriage is going to break. I have kids. I don't know how to show up. It's so hard for me to show up to work. It's so hard to go on. I would lie and say I would go to movies and act like I was at work. I was having such a hard time. I see this great guy, and he tells me, I'm like, what does he know? So it buys me even more time, right? And then, right, it bought me 2 more years of the type of disturbing, I want to touch upon this. When I say eating, I'm talking about disturbing eating. If you saw the footage of me eating, right, and I hope, and some people are like grazers all day, they don't realize like a little bit here, a little bit here, I did that. And at the same time, I did both, so I can pick. I worked in a place with children. It was like, they were always have these like people coming to like these big donors would come, and it was just like one big hors d'oeuvre, right? So I did that, and simultaneously, binging and compulsive eating it was gluttony, right? If anybody doesn't know, Overeaters Anonymous, as it was starting, there was a parallel program called Gluttons Anonymous. That's my program. They merged. I'm a glutton. So when I ate, whatever you're thinking was very disturbing, it was very fast, right? And it was disgusting, right? Like it was, if you saw the footage of me eating, we both don't want to see that. So after he told me, after I had in my head that like, what does he know with that guy, it bought me another 2 years of gluttony. When I say gluttony, one time I ate very fast. I remember my my friends from college. They all, you know, Adam's the funny big guy, right? And they were at a wedding and I wasn't there and we graduated. And my mom would cook a big vat. We had a lot of kids, so she'd cook a big vat of spaghetti. And I was so impatient and urgent with my eating, I took the bowl and I would pour it over my face. And I turned around and I looked up and it was like 2 in the morning. And there are these, my two friends are staring at me. And they had a look of horror because they didn't understand. They kind of thought, oh, he's a funny fat guy, right? But it wasn't. At that moment, they got what disturbing eating was, because that's the way I eat. So it's November 8th, 1998. I thought I'd gone on the best diet ever. I had the best endocrinologist at UCLA, the one who wrote the textbook, all that. I do what I do. I'm determined. You know, once every 4 years, I muster up a little bit of diet. This time it's going to be different, blah, blah, blah. I'm on the, and it doesn't work, and I start that, I re-engage the food. Remember, I can stop, I can't stay stopped. So I go and I go to Ralph's and I just devour the bakery section. Like, I just go and I do what I do really fast. It wasn't the worst episode of food I've ever had. The spaghetti bowl was more shaming and more embarrassing. I don't know why I woke up to November 9th, 1998. I felt terrible. And this woman who's an alcoholic at my work, she looks at me and she said, what's wrong? And I said, I can't stop eating. And she says to me, we're going to a meeting. And I'm like, what? And she says, we're going to a meeting. She thought it was a Monday, it was in Woodland Hills. She found me in Woodland Hills and she was going to a meeting. I said, thank you. I didn't know what to do. I didn't have any answers. I ran out of answers, right? And I said, why are you doing this? And she said to me, so here's some mantras. This is what we do in the program. This is what we do. And I said, thank you. She said, don't thank me, do it for someone else. Right? That was the second mantra. And we get to the meeting and I'm like, I'm tired and I'm out of answers. And she's like a little short pistol of an Italian woman, full of AA, fight anybody on the planet type of woman. And she says, Adam wants to share it. And she's like, tell them what you told me. I'm like, okay. I can't stop eating. And she said, that was November 9th, 1998. And she said, I just want you to go to these meetings. And I came up with a food plan on November 9th. I said, I'm going to eat 4 times a day. It doesn't matter what I eat. Right? That's my, again, I'm in charge. That's what I come up with. 4 times a day, eating whatever I want is the paradigm of health. Right? I'm going to be okay. Right? So that's my model of health. So here's this is the part I want you to hear most. Right, so I turned 30, November 15th, 1998. I'm at my mother-in-law's house, and you know, they know I'm a program, whatever, it's no big deal. She elects to serve tiramisu. Tiramisu, I've never had it. Things I've never had, right? I just know I gotta have that, right? Because I don't care about it. I gotta have that. So I do what I do, nobody's looking, right? I think I have like a praying mantis going, whoosh. I grab it with my hands, I stick it in my pocket, and I go to the bathroom, it's all over me, I eat it, and I eat it like I do in that sick way, full of stains, and I come to OA the next day, right? And I'm all confused. I don't know what's going on, because what did I just do, right? What was that? What was that action? Because I'm abstinent, right? I eat 4 times a day, whatever the hell I want, as much as I want. Right? I don't care if it's a sandwich, it can look like the Eiffel Tower. That's my plan, right? That's the best thinking I can come up with, right? That's my wellness plan, knowing nothing, right? So people tell me different things. I hear different messages here. I hear like, aw, it's okay. You're abstinent. That one's there if you want it, right? That's fine. I hear that. I hear, why would you, on your way from California to New York, if you get a flat tire in Phoenix, why would you go back to California, or would you just move on? I hear that one, right? And then somebody had the decency, the guy who I said, what did the psychiatrist guy, who's real thin, he says to me, oh, that's drunk with food. So he said to me, you got drunk. He's like, that's what it means to be drunk with food. And thank God he said that to me, right? Because I was getting high. That's what I was doing. And I could have used the rooms to make it okay to get high with food, right? I could have used all of you to support my wellness plan, not the program's, mine. And instead, he taught me in that moment, you got high with food. You got drunk. You know, and you can't get drunk. If you want what I have, here's what you do. I want you to jump off the cliff. I want you to you need to fire yourself, right? All matters of food, here's the common denominator. Every time I'm involved in my wellness plan, I'm not well. Right? Every time I insert myself all those years in how to eat and what's good for me, right? I don't get well, I get sicker and sicker and sicker. I can do that in the rooms. I can be here and speak about how well I am as I'm getting sicker. I have it in me to be 400 pounds saying rah, rah, abstinence. As I'm gaining 100 pounds, I have that in me, right? Because my head isn't right when it comes to matters of food. So I pictured myself like a, in my field when somebody is hospitalized, we hospitalize them because they're a danger to themselves. So at that point, they lose their rights. So in matters of food, what I said to myself is, you have lost the right to make decisions. That made, so what I'm talking about is this. I cornered my disease. I gave it no more room to operate. Wasn't, by the way, I didn't come up with this plan. He did. And somebody taught it to him. This is not my project, it's his. He taught me what it means to be sober with food. For me, right, for me, and maybe it's different, this is how I experience freedom from what I later learned is the obsession of the mind and the allergy of the body, as it's written in the doctor's opinion for food, right? That my head will come up with a million reasons why it's okay to insert food. not food that I want, not food that I need, right? And then once I start, I can't stop. And I got that. So here's what I learned from that man. If I don't make up the rules, I'm never gonna have a food problem, right? If I don't make, so what I eat, how much I eat of it, when I eat it, right? I'm out. Get me away. Freedom from the obsession, right? It's 19 years later. Next month, it'll be 19 years. Almost 19 years right now. It's almost 19 years later. I've been at a healthy body weight for many of those years. So this is the piece where I really want you to sit with, right? I had to give up the food, right? I couldn't have my cake and eat it too. Couldn't, right? I wanted to so badly. If you're in this room and you want a program, and I get it, if you want a program that says, I can eat and be well, I can eat addictively and be well, that's the program I wanted, right? That's the program I wanted so badly, I want that, but that's, I had to, the surrender piece of this for me is I had to put down my substance. And for me, that meant get me out of the way. Get me out of the way. The journey since then, right, has been unbelievable, right? It has involved, eventually, despite my arrogance, doing the steps, it has involved, and it looks like today, right? I wake up, things that I always fought. I'm never gonna write, I write every day. I'm never gonna meditate. I meditate almost an hour a day. I write, I call a sponsor, I read my writing, I have sponsees, I just go to 4 meetings a week, right? My food never changes, there's no graduating, right? It's always been the same principle of, maybe one of the things that did happen though is they said, when you get older, you know, to maintain the weight, you have to eat less. They were right. I didn't like that. I wish it was like, I can't stay at a healthy body weight. And when I talk about being a healthy body weight, why it's important to me is because the physical distortion of weight triggers my obsession, right? So being healthy, right, eating and gaining weight is a way that launches that, right? So I see people who can gain 35 pounds in the program and call themselves abstinent. That wouldn't work for me, right? It means I'm in the disease. For me, it's another thing. So when I follow that and I do the work and I do the steps, so let me just finish with this. I've been through a lot over these years. I've lost jobs. I've gotten into trouble. I've not been the best, right? But I can certainly say this. I would marry me. I would hire me. I would want me as a father, and I would want me as a friend, right? So the guy who walked in, right, is not the same guy who's sitting here today at all. And more than that, right, one thing that's always been the same, right, my concept of God has changed, right? My ideas, right? I'm shedding a lot of my nonsense, because most of what I thought, honestly, I don't even, my head, my thoughts, I'm best off ignoring them, right? It's not great information. I have much better information coming from you all. But I will say this is, the most consistent thing is this principle of habit, eat sober, never changed. No matter what. Thanks for letting me share.
I asked Adam to adopt me, but I'm older than him.
Do you want to take a break?
No,
yeah, let's keep going.
Okay, yeah. So now you want to talk before we do these other, right?
Yes, absolutely, yeah.
Okay, so Tim and Greg are going to come up and discuss exactly what it means to create a sober eating plan, and then we're going to do some handouts and some work.
Hi, I'm Tim, compulsive overeater.
Hi.
Just to, what do you call, qualify, been back in program from relapse. 8+ years, and I'm down 97 pounds this month. So we're going to go through this handout real quick, and this is something that to a group of men on Sunday morning. This is kind of what we came up with. This is what we take people through when we start working with them on how to, what do you call it, work out a sober eating plan. Basically, this is not a prescribed food plan, but a method of defining a food plan by consulting with others. That really is a very important piece of the equation. We're not going to tell you what you can and cannot. Adam can still eat bread. I cannot eat any kind of bread, you know, grains, any type of that. Everybody has a little different food allergy, so it's really up to them. But once it's defined with you and someone else, then that's what we stick with. Sober eating is just the beginning of the program. This is like step zero. This is the doctor's opinion. We're not even into the big book and the steps of the program. This is talking about triggering the mental obsession and then physical allergy. Because once we start, we can't stop. Sober eating may help us to surrender and access a power greater than ourselves that can restore us to sanity, both with our food and our lives. Again, just step zero, but it must start here. It really has to start with the food. If you're holding on to those foods, you're not in charge. The food is in charge. The food dictates when, where, and how. There's no way to access a higher power and be free if you're still using the food. That's just our theory. There's a lot of other, this is not the only approach to abstinence. This is just our approach, okay? So what is food addiction? Again, we talk about the doctor's opinion. We believe, and it's so suggested a few years ago, that the action of alcohol on these chronic alcoholics is a manifestation of the allergy, and the phenomenon of craving is limited to this class and never occurs in the average temperate drinker. These allergic types can never safely use alcohol in any form, and once having formed the habit, found they cannot break it. Once having lost their self-confidence, their reliance upon things human, their problems pile up on them and become astonishingly difficult to solve. Okay, so once we've crossed over that line, there is on our own, we are powerless to ever get back. We get brief periods, just like Adam said. We can stop, but we can't say stop. We think that, oh, we could reintroduce those foods. One of my stories is I made a bet with somebody who could give up sugar the longest. This is when my weight started really coming on for me in my 20s and 30s. And who could give up sugar the longest? And the price was, and I work construction, so I don't have a lot of money. It was 2 round trip tickets to Hawaii, so the consequences were severe. And I really wanted to change my relationship to food. I remember making that bet saying, I hope this does help me. And I won. After 9 months, I won. I won the bet. And then it was 13 months when I started to take it back. I lost all the weight doing it. You know, the weight for me, even still to this day, can come off very quickly. But I started taking the sugar, I started taking that addictive food back, and then the race was on. And it took me about 6 months to gain the weight back. You know, I eat that. That's the type of urgency I eat with when the beast is in charge. And it is. It is my master when it's introduced to my body. Later, the big book talks about the obsession of the mind. Men and women drink essentially because they like the effect produced by alcohol. They are restless, irritable, and discontent unless they can gain experience and the sense of ease and comfort which comes once by taking a few drinks. Drinks which they see others taking with impunity. After they have succumbed to the desire again, as so many do, the phenomenon of craving develops as they pass through the well-known stages of spree, emerging remorseful with a firm resolution to not drink again. This is repeated over and over. Unless the person can experience an entire psychic change, that there is very little hope for their recovery. So, wow. So my disease talks to me in two different ways. Sugar for me is like, it's like the upper, you know, I can get all jacked up, ready to go face the world. But also I need the comfort. And that's the feeling of being stuffed. I love the feeling. I mean, that's just when things are getting good. Is when I'm feeling stuffed and plump and fat and well taken care of. So I can do either. I've got no business, one, using my alcoholic foods, or two, overeating. Because both of those can trigger the disease in me. And what, like Adam talks about, I have to get myself out of the way of making food choices. Once it's been authored, once it's been written, it's mine. And for me, Adam talked about eating out of his pot. I've eaten in abstinence, eaten off the floor. I've eaten out of the garbage. One time, I've for years packed my food wherever I went, and my food fell on the floor. That was my food, though. How was I supposed to weigh and measure? So I ate right off the floor. I had no problem doing that. But it was my food, and there was no more of it. And that's how serious I can't. Oh well, there's a little bit more. That's not fair. How do I judge that? I'm always going to think what 6 ounces looks like is going to look like this. If you let me judge it, it's going to look as big as this handful instead of this fist. You know, that's who I am. I am a compulsive overeater, and I make bad food choices. And I have no choice. On my own, I return to the food no matter what. That's what I do. I have no say. If I don't keep in fit spiritual condition, I go back to the food. Once, you know, and the best part is, you know, seeing others eat the pizza, to eat the food, the cake, that's a great one. I've got 2 young girls, and they can eat, and they just put it down when they're done. That's not how I interact with food. It, you know, with my alcoholic foods. Now, when we're talking about carrots, you know, I just put those down when they're done. I don't have any problem with that. That doesn't bother me. Okay. But if you put a piece of cake or a piece of pizza, I might get away with it once. But then then it just introduces the physical phenomenon of craving. Once I break the rules, once I'm back in charge and making choices, it will be just a matter of time. I will have no choice in the matter. But I've been in 8 years. He promised it me 8 years ago. He goes, if you do not pick up your foods, you will never, ever have another food problem. And I have not. I've got a lot of life problems. And most of them are my own making. But food is not one of them. I've been placed in a position, there is real freedom here, as long as I keep this as a top piece of business. So let's keep on. Overeating is an anonymous definition of abstinence. Abstinence is an action of refraining from compulsive eating and compulsive food behaviors while working towards and maintaining a healthy body weight. Okay? So one of the things we talk about is how do we help people define their alcoholic foods? It is not being able to stop eating certain foods once you start. Obsessive craving for certain foods. Thinking you can control your intake of alcoholic foods. It is using food to instantly change your state of mind. It is amazing. When I was in the drive-thru going to McDonald's, life was okay. It really absolutely was. That food, it was funny, I was just talking to a bunch of friends. They were asking about their favorite foods. And mine is McDonald's. Without a doubt, still to this day, my favorite, I don't eat it, but my favorite food is still McDonald's. Because it takes care of what needs to be taken care of. That psychic change we talked about here, food did the same thing for me. It absolutely took care of business. It took me out of right now. And I'll tell you what, the 12 steps do exactly the same thing. It does it slower. It does it slower. But a Big Mac and large fries will take care of business right now. And I don't even have to have it. Once I've made the decision, once I'm in the drive-thru, I'm okay. So it's all up here. Once I take the food in, it becomes a physical craving. I want more. But it all starts right up here in the mind. Over time, I always go back to food. It's not a drug of choice. It is a drug of no choice. If I do not continue to walk down this spiritual path and continue to uncover, discover, and discard what is going on with me, I will go back to the food because I have no choice. I've proven it time and time again. Without serious connection and serious interruption on a daily basis, what gets in the way between me and food? 12 steps, 9 tools. Some days, it's a 12-step and 9 tool days. Other days, it's not that hard. But some days, like if I'm spending all day with my wife and kids, it's a 12-step and 9 tool day. Because that's just who I am. You know, that's an important piece of business. That I have to be separated from the beast, and it's on a daily basis that I get separated. So what is sobriety with food? It's the commitment to identifying these foods which produce an allergic reaction and an alcoholic response. Again, the obsession of the mind, the allergy of the body. Once I start, I don't want to stop. And I can't stop on my own. I can't stop from starting on my own.
So if you're listening to this and you're struggling, what may be coming up for you is this. I don't want to give that up. If you have a voice saying, I don't want to give a certain behavior up or a certain food up, right? We're probably speaking directly to you, right? That's the thing. And it's sad. Meaning if you're feeling a sense of yourself fighting this and saying to yourself, I'm never giving that up or I don't want to, right? I would just spend some time paying attention now as Tim talks, what's going on in me that's fighting this, right? Because I know I fought it, right? So that's a good sign you're listening.
So food sobriety is the belief that we owe it to ourselves to deal with our alcoholic foods like the alcoholic deals with alcohol. What Adam talked about is we can listen to the message like, it's okay. It's all right. You don't need to restart your abstinence. His abstinence was 4 times a day. He could eat whatever he wanted to. It's okay. That's all right. You can. It's okay that you work with you. You can eat in that disturbing way, or that other one with if you're on a trip to New York and you get a flat tire. It's okay. You don't have to go back. But that's up to us. You're still in charge. You're still in charge. You're still making the map. You're still saying this is where we're going. Instead of being led on the path that we have to give up control. Our aim is to help with the help of a higher power to arrest the addiction by removing the foods that activate the craving. Again, that's what we do. We just sit down. We've all sat down with the fellows sitting here, and we've worked out the foods that keep us in a position safe and protected. That's what we're looking for. We're looking for freedom. That's all we're looking for. And it's always authored Adam has said to me many times, we've had this, we have this discussion probably once every couple years, you know, about, you know, foods and quantities of food and things like that, because again, as I'm getting older, I get less. And he is the judge, but I can be the lawyer, but he is the judge. I can make the argument for holding on, but eventually he makes the decision and I execute the plan. That is all. But once it's made, it's done. I can make same choices about another person's food, but not my own. I have no business in my own food. My wife gets to make those choices when we're out. She says how much, and I execute the plan. Co-workers have got to execute the choice, and or make the choice, and I make the and I execute the plan. Food, the size of the plate says how much I get to eat, and I execute that plan. That goes on. All decisions are made with consultation with someone else, with our wives, or co-workers, sponsors, fellow, anyone but me. Because once I insert my say back in there, all of a sudden, I'll probably get away with it once, twice. But then I'll get self-confidence. I will be confident, oh, I did it once. And that's what I'll hold on to. I'll hold on to that one time that I did go through McDonald's for someone else and didn't order anything for myself. I'll hold on to that. Well, and I'll tell myself I can do it again, and I can do it for on down the road. But I won't. I will go back. I'll play with the fire, because that's what I do, because I'm an addict, and I need to have done what I need to have done. And so I'm either going to get it through the 12 steps and the spiritual awakening, or I'm going to get it through the food. It must be done. But once I'm back in charge, I'll get it done from the food, because that's who I am. Where are we? Prescribed food amounts, for example, one plate rule, weighing and measuring, unless approved by another person. A plate will typically be a balanced non-alcoholic, a balanced portions of non-alcoholic foods that support sober eating. Again, I can pile a plate pretty high, but it will tell at the end of the month, is it supporting my sober eating? And then adjust, then we get to have more discussions. Once I get to the top end of my range, that's when the discussion starts to happen. I don't like those discussions. I'm afraid of those discussions. Still in 8 years. And he's never like just taken things away, but I still don't like those discussions. So my plates must support sober eating. They must support a healthy, balanced diet. And so I don't have to worry about it anymore. The weight's where it needs to be, and then there's no discussion. Why are there struggles with food sobriety? With such a simple plan, eating only what's been approved, and again, I've worked with guys where there's 10 different dinners that you can eat. We work out 5 different lunches. We work out 8 different breakfasts with snacks and all that stuff. You can, and in that, you can choose your own things. You can have your Italian meal, but the Italian meal that's been prescribed. You can have your Mexican meal. You can have your whatever, Russian meal. We'll figure it out. But why is it so difficult that once it's been approved, why do we continue to insert ourselves into it? We're willful people. We're entitled. Oh my goodness, you're not going to tell. I'm 48 years old. Nobody's going to tell me what to do, especially with food. Deniable or minimizing. I can handle this. I've got this. That was always one of my keywords. When that came up, oh, I've got this, I don't need to make that outreach call. One of my big things is when I'm hungry, I eat enough food physically that I really should never be hungry. I should never be hungry. If I'm hungry, something's going on. Something is going on. I need to talk to somebody. I need the 9-step and 12 tools. Some days I'm hungry for no reason. I need interruption, because on my own, I might get through it again.
So one thing that I think has been very helpful for me and for many of us is the whole idea of listening intuitively to our kids. My assumption is that my barometer, my measure of hunger is broken. So 90% of the time, just because I feel an appetite in some way, doesn't mean anything. That's just not good information, right? And I have enough food, so I'm always, when a meal ends, I'm always, like, not always, I'd say 90% of the time when a meal ends, I get a tang of disappointment, right? Okay, maybe that doesn't mean, right? So that has nothing to do with hunger.
Defiance. Isolation, no meeting, no outreach calls. Again, even self-confidence. I really want no self-confidence when it comes to food. If I have self-confidence, I don't need you. And if I don't need you, I don't need to go to meetings. I don't need to drive up to Santa Barbara. I don't need to get up early to take care of the disciplines of 10 and 11, the daily disciplines of 10 and 11. And then all of a sudden, I'll invite the beast back in the door. You know, I'm sure you've heard it. Everybody says, oh, my beast is doing push-ups. The disease is doing push-ups. Mine is just waiting. Mine is just waiting for me to open the door. And how do I open the door? Not going to meetings, not reading my big book, not calling other fellows, not doing all the things that need to be done to keep the disease, the obsession of the mind arrested. And I invite him right back in. And then he's in charge. And I am his slave. He says when and where we're eating. It might be under the illusion that I'm under control, but he says exactly what's gonna happen. There's, you know, hunger. I mean, when I'm feeling hungry, I eat enough food. I eat five times a day, no matter what. I eat when I'm not hungry. It doesn't matter, because if I skip my snack, I'm gonna want it the next day.
Well,
my goodness, it should count. But now I'm all of a sudden. Here's what I'll do. I'll save it. I'll save it up. It'll be lunch, dinner, and two snacks all at one time. Whoa, hold on. And that can trigger the food. Too much can trigger I have no business overeating. My prescribed foods amount when they are prescribed. Ego, again, I can handle this. I don't need conscious contact with the higher power. And that's the only thing, the spiritual awakening as a result of the 12 steps is the only thing that's going to stop me from going back to my food. That is the only thing. It says it time and time again in the big book. The only thing, a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps is what's going to keep us safe and protected. It's not going to be the phone calls. It's not going to be this. It's not going to be any of that. It is going to be a spiritual connection with a higher power. It is going to be an entire psychic change from who I was before. Graduation. Oh, when do I get to? The best part was Adam, after 30 days of working with Adam, Adam was like, so what foods, as soon as you put them on your plate, you were looking for your second helpings. You know what my thought was? Oh, good, I'll get more of those. I'm like, this is great. So it was rice and potatoes. He's like, oh, okay, so in my opinion, and he's always been so gentle, much more gentle than I am. He's been always so nice to me. He's like, listen. Once you start eating those, what in my experience is, if you really want to play with these, you're going to lose. And you might be able to portion control them and control and enjoy, but over time, it's eventually going to lead to the next one. It's going to be the flour. It was rice and potatoes was the one things I didn't want to give up. He goes, it's eventually going to lead to rice, and it's going to lead to potatoes, and it's going to lead to flour, and it's going to lead to pasta, and it's going to lead to sugar, and then it just, that's the way it is. It, you know, half measures avail us nothing when we talk about the food, because it's just going to lead us right back to the beast. Self-pity, wow. You know, I'm very good at that. You know, why does everybody else get to eat this and I don't? You know, those are the warning signs. So these are the things, when they start to pop in my head, I need an eruption, because these things unstopped. Or walk me right back to the food. The beast starts to come, because this is how the beast, this is what he talks to me. He talks to me in my own voice. This is what he says. Oh, you don't need to be accountable. You don't need to be accountable to a sponsor and responsible for your men behind you. You're fine. You got this today. There's the last one. You got this. Whoa, big warning sign. Big warning sign, because if I got this, again, I don't need you. I can do this in isolation. Yeah, I tried that. I did. Yeah. Once the obsession has been triggered, we begin to negotiate with foods. I can eat this. I can control. If I eat this, I eat this. And I can control my weight. by eating less of this and more of this, and but then all the it puts me back in the middle of the decision-making process, and I want to be removed from the decision-making process because I make bad food choices. 8 years in, 8 days in, 80 years in. I'm an addict. I go back to the food no matter what. All I gotta do is ask for help. My wife can help me. My coworkers can help me. My fellows can help me. We send texts and pictures of food all day long. A woman asked me, how can we help men up here in the Central Coast who don't have access to other men? There's not a lot of men up here, from my understanding. Guess what? Worldwide, there's a meeting 24 hours a day on our phone. There's podcasts for men and women in this recovery. We can access this power whenever we want to. It doesn't have to just be face-to-face. The story we tell ourselves is, I can only go to a meeting face-to-face. But that's the story. That's a disease still telling us how and when we can get recovery. Forget those old ideas. Eating those gray area foods. Now, I don't know what would be a gray area food for me right now. I don't know. You know, it's funny. I've never said like corn chips. I mean, I would never eat a corn, but I'd eat corn. But corn chips, I would never eat. I would never introduce that because again, that's a chip, and that would just trigger me. But you know, corn could be like a gray area food. Now, it's always been on a plate, and that was the end of that discussion. But I don't play with those foods because I'm going to want more of them. Fat serenity. This is not our definition. This is Roseanne talked about this in her 1999 address to the World Service Business Conference, where being overweight and still talking about the spiritual being abstinent, and she had to retire from the board. Because she had, because she had broken her abstinence. Selective honesty, that's a basically lying. Because that's what I'll do. I want to edit the truth to my sponsor instead of being fully transparent. As soon as I start that, you know, that's when I am back in charge and I need to get myself out of the way. So what does struggling with food sobriety look like? Now these are some of the things that if you're saying to yourself, this might be something that you want to, that you might want to take a look at. I ate too much, but here's the recovery. This is a share that we hear a lot. That, I had a little binge, but my recovery was I stopped before it became a whole day thing. I had a binge at breakfast, but I stopped before lunch. My food is getting wonky. You know, again, once we put ourselves back in charge, we really aren't in charge. I'm abstinent, but I'm in the food. And I'm technically abstinent, is what, you know. I'm abstinent, but I'm not really free. So what does it look like to be sober with the food? And you can go right to the 10-step promises. We have ceased fighting anything or anyone, even food. For this time, sanity will be returned. We will seldom be interested in our alcoholic foods. If tempted, we recoil from it from a hot flame. We will act sanely and normally. We will find this has happened automatically. We will see that a new attitude towards food has been given us without any thought or effort on our part. It just comes. That's the miracle of it. We feel as though we have been placed in a position of neutrality, safe and protected. We have not even sworn off. Instead, the problem has been removed. It does not exist for us. And we are neither cocky nor afraid. This is our experience. This is how we react as long as we remain in fit spiritual condition. So again, food sobriety is the start. Fit spiritual condition. And the fit spiritual conditions are the daily rigors of 10 and 11. A conscious contact with a higher power. Keeping our side of the street clean. That's the only way, day to day, that I can remain in fit spiritual condition. Or I will go back to the food. It's guaranteed. How many times do we go back to the food? Always. Unaided on our own, we always go back to the food. So ultimately, I have problems, but food is no longer one of them. So thank you very much for listening, and I'll see you in a good break.
So to misquote Jay-Z, I got 99 problems, but food ain't one. What we'd like to do next is we're going to have somebody come up and we're going to create a sober eating plan for them, and then we're all going to break out and do our own sober eating plan with some guys from the boys from the Valley here. I think it's 11:25. Why don't we reconvene at 25 to 12, so 10-minute break, if that's all, or do you want more time?